Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. This morning we're visiting with Deb Lamb. She's social worker with United Point at Home Hospice. Good morning to you, Deb.
Good morning, LaVon. How are you?
I'm good and hope you're feeling okay given all the allergy season, like a lot of other people are kind of getting really hit with that right now. Unity Point at Home, that's not the name that we usually associate with home health care. I mean, I don't quite put those together. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Well, just recently, we were rebranded by Iowa Health. We had been purchased by Iowa Health Systems out of Des Moines about 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago now, and they have rebranded their entire ownership of all their hospitals and home cares and doctors' clinics to be Unity Point Health. And because we're a home care agency, we are Unity Point at Home, and hospice is a division under Unity Point at Home. So whether you used to see Cass County Hospice, we are now Unity Point at Home.
Okay. The most important thing is it's still hospice. That's the job you're doing for people. And so today we want to talk about advanced directives.
Yes, because that's a very important topic for people to start thinking about early. A lot of times, I think we're all very familiar when you go to the doctor's office or if you're admitted to the hospital or go to your eye doctor, even for that matter, they're all going to ask you, do you have advanced directives? Do you have a power of attorney for healthcare decisions? Do you have a living will? And do the people that you have on those forms know exactly what you want them to do? So it's very important. It's an important thing to think about, and an important thing not to just say, oh yeah, quick, I'll throw somebody's name on a legal form and say they're my healthcare decision maker, and then not ever tell that decision maker what you really want.
Mm-hmm. And for instance, in my case, one of the people I have on there lives across the country. And so I think it's really important that they maybe even be reminded once in a while that they're on there.
I think so, reminded, and also continuing discussions, because, you know, it's impossible to sit down one time and cover everything. And as things come across us in our life, we know somebody else who was very ill or somebody else who was in an accident or someone else who was facing a challenging situation. Sitting down again and rediscussing that now, if this happened to you, would you want that ventilator? Would you want that feeding tube? Would you want cardiac resuscitation? You know, just exactly how aggressive would you like to be?
Okay, and we'll mention those again, but how do we go about, what's the process for putting that together?
Well, it's a relatively simple process. For just the healthcare power of attorney, you do not need to use an attorney or a lawyer. You can download forms off the internet. You can come here to our office. We can provide you those forms. The National Association of Hospice and Palliative Care has a site where you can download state-specific forms. Basically, it just says on those forms that you're appointing someone, and I always say you appoint one person. It's got to be the buck stops here kind of thing. I know people who have six children and they put all six children as equal power of attorney. Well, that's fine if all six of your kids just get along perfectly, but if one of those children disagrees, then who are they supposed to listen to? So while I say it's hard to pick out just one, you do need one that's the ultimate decision maker. You need a second, so that if that, like in your case where the person who's way away, if they couldn't be contacted, you would need someone closer that maybe could in a quicker, you know, you have to have two, but always one at the top. And then it has to be notarized or it has to be signed in front of two witnesses, non-related and not healthcare provider.
Okay. So it does take some time thinking about it. It does take some time getting it done, although it's not a really, really, really difficult thing to do. You know, when you were talking about the six children thing, I was just reading a situation, I think, in the newspaper or something. And, you know, so often if there are whatever number, three, six, whatever, that they're not all close by. And sometimes the ones further away don't really see what's happening.
That's exactly right. You can only know so much by phone. And, you know, you try to keep everybody updated by what's happening. But sometimes they come in a hurry, something tragic has happened, and they come in and they've got to be caught up to speed. And so oftentimes then everything slows down while this person needs to get caught up with things. And while that's important, sometimes the decisions need to be made a little faster than that.
And it would be good if they all had talked to each other also to hopefully get some agreement, because I know, you know, in all of the things that go on, sometimes families just really kind of break up over that.
Well, they do, because it gets to be a lot of hard feelings. It gets to be a lot of, questions. We should have done this. We should have done that. Did we think about this? And it's a hard time anyway. And it is good if everybody can be on the same page.
Now, you've mentioned kind of several scenarios. I mean, if somebody is ill and, you know, there's some more time perhaps to make decisions, but something could happen tomorrow, today, and then you don't have that kind of time to make those decisions. So one of the reasons we're talking about this is maybe it would be easier to make these kind of decisions when there's nothing that we know about that's going to happen.
Well, that's always better to plan than to react in a crisis. That's exactly right. It's so much easier to sit down and say, you know, if I was in a car accident and this was the prognosis and this is what they would say I would be, if I'm going to be a vegetable or if I will not regain the use of my legs or my arms or whatever, this is what I would want you to do. Mm-hmm. Now, and I think a lot of people assume that living wills and power of attorneys means you don't want anything, but it can be converse that you really do want. I mean, there are people that say on their living wills, I want everything done that's possible, and that's just fine. But there again, people have to know that, because if your power of attorney assumes, well, she probably would just not want to live like this, and in reality you would, you really have to let people know that. So
okay, earlier you had mentioned a few of those kinds of items. Can you mention a few more that you may want to consider whether you're going to put them in or not in terms of care?
Well, like a ventilator would be one thing. Feeding tube is a big question sometimes. Sometimes it's even the use of antibiotics. Sometimes it's just how aggressive are they going to be surgery-wise. It's more defining kind of the quality of life that you would like to lead. If my quality can't be at this level, then please let me go. Or conversely, I'll take any quality of life that you can give me. I want you to do everything. So
that's one of the reasons you are here also, is that you could help people talk through this and understand more the kinds of decisions that they're making.
Yeah, I've got several very good tools that guide you through the process, that ask questions that kind of say, okay, now here's some scenarios, talk about this, here's some things to consider, talk about that. And I think that's what's helpful, because just to be handed the form and put the names on, it's kind of, well, then where do you go from there? So I've got a couple of very good packets that I'd be more than happy to share with anybody who would like to have one, that really do guide you through the process. And again, then tell you what to do with it. You know, some people have it and then they put it in the safe deposit box. It's not your will. It's you need everybody to have a copy, the doctor, the hospital, your power of attorneys need a copy. That's the real thing, is to get it out in everyone's hands.
Okay. Everybody who should know what's going on there. Now, Deb, we've sort of talked here about this is an individual kind of thing that you visit with people. What do you go out and do programs for groups?
Oh, yes, certainly. We do that all the time. I've gone to speak to a lot of church groups and community groups and just any groups at all that would like to have some information, and we'd be more than happy, myself or any of the other staff, to go do that. So,
do you want to mention some of your other staff members? Because it's not just Deb Lamb, social worker. You have a whole group that's helps people through whatever needs to be done.
Yeah, hospice is obviously a team, and the other social worker involved is Lydia Ropfus, and we have two primary care nurses, Lynn Maurer and Kathy Nelson. Carol Schuler is our volunteer coordinator. Jennifer Gustafson is our team lead. Dr. Barry is our medical director. And then we have Luann Inkin sits on our team as a pharmacist. Pastor Leon Hodges is our chaplain. Emily Kringle is our dietitian. I'm hoping I'm not missing anybody, but so it's a team effort. But yes, we all can go out and do presentations on various topics. Obviously, the nurses present a little different than the social workers, that kind of thing, but we're all available.
Who decides if a person should receive hospice care?
It has to be the doctor. The doctor ultimately writes the order that he feels that the patient has, in their guess, best estimation, 6 months or less of life. That's just a guess. We've had people on longer than 6 months. But they have to have a terminal condition. There's criteria set up by Medicare that we follow that meets that for the criteria for that condition, and then the doctor's order.
Okay. But family members could discuss that with their doctor and ask why it's not being done, or this is what we think should be done. I mean, this, again, should be a discussion.
Yes, exactly. And they can come and talk to us, too, before a doctor's order. We can get the doctor's order for them if they want to just come in and talk and say, you know, my mom, my grandma, somebody's declining. I just am kind of curious, when would they be eligible for hospice? They're needing more care all the time, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Or if there's symptoms to be managed. This is really the key. If someone has pain that's unmanaged, nausea, just a lot of symptoms, shortness of breath, if they need some symptom management, hospice just does that extraordinarily well. And in fact, oftentimes it's been proven someone on hospice with the same illness actually lives longer than someone who doesn't go on hospice, mm-hmm. because their symptoms are so well managed.
And Deb, that's probably something that we should talk about another time, because there's lots more to say about hospice. We want to thank you very much, Deb Lamb, for visiting with us today about United Point at Home Hospice. Unity Point at Home Hospice. Thank you so much, Deb. Until next time, here's a thought. The silver lining is sometimes easier to look for in someone else's cloud.